the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados 92.9 FM. You can call us at 434-1790. You can send us a WhatsApp at 253-4679 or an email at cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. Plenty lottery games to win. Scratch and you could win something.
Here's your chance to cash in on big winnings for 2020 with the newest $10 scratch ticket from the Barbados Lottery. Purchase a cash-in ticket today for your chance to win up to $100,000 and to double or even triple your winnings on each ticket. So play and win big with cash-in from the Barbados Lottery.
Well, I suppose there's a lot to smile about in relation to the young men in Nelson Mandela's country. They're doing extremely well. They started against Australia, they won, and then against England. So they had two tough matches, and they've vert into the quarterfinals. They've got to play against Nigeria, and this really should make everyone in the Caribbean smile, from Kingston, Jamaica, right through to Bridgetown, Barbados. That's good news. Of course, the West Indies senior team in battle had to come back in the last match to level the series against Ireland. And we all know that in regional cricket, not often that this happens, but the defending champions were beaten by Barbados. In fact, the last time Barbados would have won would have been back in 2014 they won in Guyana and in Barbados. I certainly was there for that game when Barbados defended 68 runs. And it really was a pretty good game in the end. Barbados with a lead of 180, despite some resistance. The situation is that Barbados actually went on to win that game. And, of course, the next round of matches, the third series, will very much be started. And quickly, in terms of the points, the Red Force is out front, I suppose. When Tony Gray comes a call, he'll be quite a happy man. 29.6 points to Windward's, 29.4. Barbados Pride, 25.6. Guyana Jaguars, the defending champions, 24.8. That's not a position that you normally see them in. The Scorpions, 14.8. And the Leewards at the bottom, only 4 points from their two matches. But of course, Dr. Ford is with me. The big news is from South Africa. Good performance from the youngsters.
Yeah, definitely. Good night, Andrew, and good night to all the listeners. The under-19s have started the tournament very well, and we hope they will progress and keep on doing us proud. Certainly, the all-rounder Young has shone with the bat and the ball, but of course, all the other members of the team will want to make their contribution and help to make this a winning effort in the long run. But yeah, a good start.
A very good start indeed. We're going to try to get Graham West, the head coach. He's all the way in South Africa. He's told me that there have been some challenges in reaching him, but he's decided that, look, he's going to be up. It's about 12 o'clock now, I believe, there in South Africa, and we're hoping to be able to touch base with him. Of course, we want to look at the West Indies side. How do you rate them in terms of that performance against Ireland, Doctor?
As far as the T20 performance?
Yep.
Well, I think it was below par.
Below par?
Yeah, Ireland is ranked way below us, around 14th, the last I checked, and we were at 10th, so you would expect that we would beat Ireland convincingly. So to have drawn the series is an unsatisfactory result. And if you looked at the way we lost the first match, or bowling was unable to contain the Irish. But then even when we batted, we did have opportunities at the end to win the game, and we didn't get that done. We folded at the end. The second match, we won at a canter, but certainly there are a lot of concerns about the T20 team and the performance, and you know, that's some concerns we've had for for a while since our last World Cup win.
Mm. Now, you said there's some concerns. Go into it a little bit more there. Of course, in terms of Simmons, three matches, 123 runs, the highest of 91. Hetmer continues to be a hot and cold player. Three matches, just 32 runs. And Pollard, the captain, got 31. Seems as if he bowled better than the batting. He actually got seven wickets. So some concerns about the batting.
Yeah, definitely the batting. Batting has been a problem for us. But the bowling has been more of a concern where the series has gone so far. I mean, we haven't been as penetrative as we would like to be, especially in the early overs. Our first few overs, we've gone for a lot of runs in the first and the third T20 international, and you know, we were put to the sword by the Ireland openers, and we haven't been able to really push through and to contain them. So that's a problem. The fielding wasn't that bad, but the bowling gives a cause for concern. Still, the team lacks a strike bowler, and also when you look at the spinner that's going to go into the middle overs and take those wickets, we still haven't really figured that one out. And mysteriously, I'd say that in a three-match series for Hayden Walsh to have bowled only three overs doesn't help us to solve or answer any questions regarding his ability to fit in after taking the most wickets in the CPL. Mm-hmm. And Pierre only bowled five, but I think just from a contrast of the two styles, we really need to see what Walsh can offer. And I was a bit disappointed, especially in the last T20 international on that slow pitch, that, you know, some other part-timers like Rutherford and even the captain himself bowled more overs than Walsh. I think that was a time in a match that we were going to win that we had to see what Walsh had in him in conditions that would suit him. And, you know, I don't think we've learned enough about Walsh on the tour to India. And now coming back to the West Indies, we've taken a guy who was on a high after the CPL, and I think his confidence must have waned somewhat.
He's not been treated well. Well, of course, we also want to talk about Bravo as well. And we're going to, as I said, try to reach Graham West a little bit later on. But let's go to Jamaica and talk to old Tracy, who wrote a stinging article. Return of selfish Bravo, another sign of West Indies rot. And we've also got Fazer Mohammed of the Trinidad and Tobago. Fazer, how are you? Oral, how are you as well?
I'm great.
Good, wonderful. Wonderful to have you. Gentlemen, before we get into the meat of the matter, Fazer, you must be quite happy with the West Indies performance in South Africa, the youngsters?
Outstanding, Andrew. I think more than anything else, the way the West Indies under 19 struggled in that tri-nation series against England and Sri Lanka last month, we saw some promise in quite a few of the players during the regional Super 50. And let's not forget that the emerging West Indies team lifted the Super 50 title. But to see the way they have performed, beating Australia for the first time ever in under 19 World Cup competition, because when the West Indies won in 2016, Australia didn't take part in that tournament in Bangladesh. And to follow that up by beating England so comprehensively as they did yesterday, that truly doubles up as a really outstanding effort from these under-19s, so basically already into the quarterfinals.
Yes, they are indeed. What are they saying in Jamaica, Oral, about the West Indies performances there in South Africa?
Absolutely surprised, but pleasantly so, and we're also very happy at the performance of the Jamaican team. None of us expected it, as Fazia said. The warm-up games were not all that, the results were not all that impressive. The performances were basically all not that impressive. So I guess a lot of us, we were not expecting all that much from this under-19 team. But we're pleasantly surprised, and we're buzzing now to see how far they can. I can tell you this, Andrew.
Yes.
We are much happier at the performances of the under-19s than we are at the performances of the senior team. Oh. I think we're overreacting to some victories against Ireland, and I think we should never be celebrating. At no point in the history of West Indies cricket should we be over celebrating tying a T20 series with Ireland.
Fazir, agree with that?
Yes, I do, because from that one-all, I would give the West Indies probably 5.5 out of 10 as far as the way they would have performed, because they were caught unawares, they were caught cold in that first match by the 7th over Ireland at 100 runs on the board, and only then the West Indies started to pull things back. In the end, they lost the match by 4 runs at a stage when they should have won it. The second one was rained off, and then the third, they really came on strong. But again, the fact is that the West Indies have yet to reach that level of consistent excellence. And if you're going to struggle to achieve that against Ireland, and again, no disrespect to Ireland, but Orel is right on the ball when you talk about the fact that if the West Indies are going to be so competitive against India, the number one team in the world, with the levels of motivation from our players in that series last month, and then to find themselves where they probably should have lost the second ODI, but for those errors by their bowler, Adair, in that final over, and actually had to settle for a 1-all in the T20 series, I think the West Indies have a tremendous amount of work still to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's come back to, you know, Oral. You're saying that you're not going to be singing and dancing all through Kingston about the performance.
No.
No.
Okay. No, not from getting a drawn result against Ireland. I think we've because of the performances of the West Indies team in recent years, the below par performances, we've dropped the bar too far in terms of what we accept as good performances and impressive performances and things to jump and shout about. So I'm taking it in stride, taking it, looking at the mini positives that can be coming out. In fact, in truth and in fact, we are playing our cricket a little bit with a little bit more cerebral application in recent times.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of situations in some of these games that a West Indies team of 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago would have probably just fallen away and melted away like butter in sun. But we were detecting a little bit more resilience, a little bit more professionalism. I'm not sure what Phil Simmons and the coaching staff, what kind of sessions they're having, if they're having sit-down and talks with them, that they're having psychologists talking to them. But I can detect a little bit more application and tenacity in the application of the skill sets of the cricket game throughout the period of the game. And that's a positive we can clutch at. But overall, we're not going to celebrate the blocking the roads in Kingston for drawing us a series of Ireland.
Oral, do you support our good friend Pollard as captain?
I have a little problem with it.
Why?
I have a little problem.
Why?
Because he, look here. I was never into this thing about insularity, Fazir. But I'm not Fazir. I'm Andrew.
Yes.
But I'm from that old West Indies school. Not old West Indies school, but the old enough West Indies school to have developed an appreciation for loyalty and commitment. And I think over the past several years, with the emergence of the T20 game, a cadre of West Indian representatives, I think their loyalty and their commitment have consistently been split between representing the West Indies in international cricket and taking care of your own business in franchise T20 cricket. Mm. And along the same lines of principle, I value commitment a lot in the support of my team. And I find Pollard is a fair captain, but I would have preferred, personally, I would have gone for an investment in a captain for the future, for the longer term, than turn to Kieran Pollard. And it's the same principle along which I have a bit of a problem with even Bravo, just strolling back, Dwayne Bravo just strolling back into the team after 3 years out in the wilderness, having not been active for, 7, 8 months, it doesn't go down well with me, Andrew. And I can tell you, up here in Jamaica, quite a few, it dominated the discussions on the talk shows in Jamaica. And surprisingly, that sentiment is gaining quite a bit of traction. Mm-hmm. A lot of people seem to be having the problem with the way these guys seem to be, as I put it in my piece, using West Indies cricket at their own convenience. And it's rubbing us a little bit wrong, as we say here in Jamaica.
Mm. Fazir, you want to respond to that?
Sure. I suppose, first of all, I would ask, Orel, who would be the alternative as West Indies captain to Kieran Pollard?
Mm.
Well, I haven't thought about it, but you first of all, you have a vision of what you want,
mm-hmm.
What you want to achieve. if you're looking long, if you're looking, you see, my thing, you know, Andrew and company,
yes,
is that I am thinking more about the medium to long-term development of a team that can get us back to where, to some semblance of competitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I am not sure if with the return of not the return, but with Ricky Skerritt mm-hmm. coming to the fold as Cricket West Indies president, I am picking up the be-all and end-all of his vision, if you can call it a vision, is to go back to all of these no aging cricketers and usher them back into the fold. I am not sure if in terms of development and foresight and vision for the future, that is necessarily the best way to go. We have a World Cup coming up, a T20 World Cup coming up in the latter stages of this year.
Mm-hmm.
I have felt more comfortable seeing us invest in a good youngster, expose them in a series against Ireland, look at them in the CPL coming up, and try and get some more young players to that level where we can compete, not just at this World Cup, but at the other one and the other one. Well, what is happening here is pretty much short-term and myopic for my liking.
Mm-hmm. Fazer?
Well, I suppose the other thing would be the point that Oran made about, you know, having an old-fashioned view of West Indies cricket and recognizing loyalty. I suppose in that sense, mm-hmm. Clive Lloyd never should have been made captain at the end of World Series cricket, because he, together with all our prominent players, had turned their backs on West Indies cricket. Alvin Kallitran was the captain, and as soon as the fences were mended, Lloyd was back as captain, and Kallitran was relegated to being a member of the squad. I make that point to say that it's always interesting that when history repeats itself, we have different perspectives and different points of view. And in the case of Dwayne Bravo, and I read Orwell's piece in relation to the fact that he was seen to be the engineer, because he was the captain, of course, behind that walkout of the tour of India and the humiliation that caused. And if I read Orwell correctly, that indeed it was such an act of high ingratitude and humiliation that was engineered by Bravo,
mm-hmm.
yet the same Cameron administration kept him in the West Indies squad for 15 more T20 internationals until 2016. So it doesn't really add up to say, well, it was such a humiliating thing created by Bravo, and he was still in the team for another 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I know he was in the team for a year, but that having said that, he also retired from international cricket. He subsequently retired, and all of a sudden, he subsequently retired,
mm-hmm.
right? Obviously, because he had issues with the president. Dwayne Bravo doesn't play for Dave Cameron. He plays for the people of the Caribbean. He plays for the institution of West Indies cricket. So I have a problem with a senior pro like Dwayne Bravo mm-hmm. walking away, turning his back on West Indies cricket. And all of a sudden, because the president he doesn't like is gone,
mm-hmm.
and the president he likes is back, so all of a sudden he's in love with West Indies cricket again. I find that a little bit too fickle for my liking in my international representative. Maybe, as Fazer alluded to, I'm an old-fashioned West Indian fan, but it is what it is. It doesn't sit easy with me personally.
Mm. Fazer?
Fair point. Can we say with definitive assurance that Dwayne Bravo turned his back, if you want to use that term,
mm-hmm.
turned his back on West Indies cricket simply because he couldn't saddle with Dave Cameron? Or did he turn his back, again, if you want to use that phrase, turn his back on West Indies cricket because Cricket West Indies, under the stewardship of Dave Cameron, wasn't prepared to have any discussions with those franchise players about whether or not they could work out a system of their availability to play for the West Indies, given the competing demands of franchise cricket, which pays a lot more than they would playing for the West Indies. And at the risk of being described as mercenaries, they were willing to reach arrangements with Cricket West Indies because they were required to sign franchise contracts 3 months in advance. And by my understanding, when they approached Cricket West Indies with those proposals, they met dead silence, so they were left with no choice.
Mm.
But, so he had to retire, Fazer. He could not
when I say he had to retire, at the end of the day, Orel, if it is that
uh-huh.
at 2016, which was September 2016, the last time he was selected for the West Indies, and he announced
mm-hmm.
his retirement 2 years later, it basically means that either by his own choice, or by the choice
mm-hmm.
of the West Indies selectors, that he wasn't being picked. So 2 years after he announced his retirement, basically because he wasn't being selected again.
No, but again, Fazier, if you read my column, there's a section in which I address that exact issue. Dwayne Bravo had a choice. He could have continued to play franchise cricket and make himself available as much as possible for regional cricket, for first-class cricket and regional cricket. Perform. Dwayne Bravo is a superstar in West Indies cricket terms. Mm-hmm. In world cricket terms. He could publicly express his desire and his passion to continue representing his dear West Indies, right? And continue to play and allow his cricket to do the talking. But no, he chose to pick up his marbles and run. Mm. And because his friend is back and his friend is now the captain, he's back with his marbles and ready to play. Mm. I don't think we have to call a spade. And it is what it is. And we have to... It is just too conspicuous. Ooh. That as soon as Ricky Skerritt and took over the presidency of the board, Phil Simmons took over the coaching of the team, Karen Pollard is the captain, here comes Dwayne Bravo, happy again, posting up on Facebook how brilliant the West Indies team is. All of a sudden, it is not... going down well in some parts of the Caribbean, and not just Jamaica.
Mm. Faze, is there any merit in what Oral is saying?
There is some merit, but I would say, since we're on the topic of calling a spade,
yes.
Will you be willing to acknowledge that a lot of the problems relating to those franchise players and their unavailability and their availability and so on had to do with the intransigence of the president of Cricket West Indies?
Absolutely. He was not the best leader. He was not the perfect leader. But you see my thing here, Fazir. I think it is petty and unprofessional to be using your relationship with a single individual to determine your level of commitment to the West Indies cricket is bigger than any single individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just thought it was wrong. I thought it was basically unprofessional. You're trying to imply here, Fazir, that the players did not walk off the floor. I saw a gentleman put up a tweet today criticizing my article and saying that it was Dave Cameron who pulled the team off the tour. Is that true?
No, I never said that. Or don't misrepresent what I'm saying. I never said that the players did not walk off, because they did. But
okay.
Again, if we want to keep calling a spade. Let's get back to what would have triggered that situation. And I'm sure you're aware that what happened was there was a discussion with the players in principle as to them giving up some of their fees towards the support of the regional franchise format, the first-class format.
I'm aware of that.
And then, you're not aware of that?
Yes, he said he was.
I am aware of it. I'm saying nothing justifies a team getting up and walking off a tour.
Mm-hmm. Allow me to finish. As far as the players then, when they were actually on tour, because no contracts had been signed, only to be made aware that the reduction in their fees was in some cases as much as 50%, and in other cases even more than that, and it prompted Darren Sammy, who was often accused as being one of the yes men on the West Indies team, kowtowing to the administration. He was the one who said openly that he felt more betrayed than anyone else because of that situation. By no means am I condoning the walking out as occurred in that situation, but I think what would have contributed to the situation is that the Cameron administration refused to intervene at that point when the BCCI were looking to Cricket West Indies to intervene to rescue the situation, and Cricket West Indies said nothing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a matter of...
I'm fully aware of the sequence of events that unfolded on that ill-fated tour. But I am saying there is nothing on the face of this earth that can justify an international set of professional cricketers walking off the middle of a tour. And
if that is the point you're making, do you therefore say that it was wrong of Clive Lloyd, Viv Richards, Desmond Haynes, Gordon Greenidge, Joel Garner, Andy Roberts, Michael Holding, all walking out of the West Indies team on the eve of the third test match against Australia in Guyana when two of the Kerry Packer players had been dropped?
I wouldn't agree with that either, on the same principle. Okay. You sort out your differences, and you play cricket, and you sort out your differences after 5 o'clock. After 90 overs, and you come, and you engage in whatever exercises are necessary to iron things out. I am never a fan of walking off. And look at the fallout. Look at the financial fallout it caused to the West Indies Cricket Board. All because you want to spite one man, as arrogant and as obnoxious as he might be. Come on, I'm still having, you see, one of the things, Pazzi, why I keep rehashing that ill-fated tour, is that a lot of people are giving the impression, that the West Indies board then, the great West Indies board then, just never liked Dwayne Bravo, and they were being vindictive. He was paying the consequences for his actions.
Mm. All right, gentlemen.
Let's
pause for business calls. Of course, we got to make some money and ensure this program is kept in the air. Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. Plenty lottery gifts to win. Scratch and you could win something.
Win up to $100,000 with the new $10 scratch ticket money multiplier. Multiply your prize up to 10 times. Multiply your winnings today. Available at Barbados Lottery locations islandwide.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch Barbados Lottery.
This is Mason and Guest. I'm Andrew Mason. Alongside me is Dr. Andrew Ford. We've got on the line Oral Tracy out of Jamaica, the noted journalist, and he's got a wonderful program there on TV called Sports Commentary, and of course the noted journalist Fazia Mohammed. I know you've got something to say, Doctor.
Yeah, I think what really rubs people the wrong way is the, you know, loyalty, diplomacy, decorum. The problems that Cricket West Indies face are no different to the difficulties faced by all the regional boards, except for maybe India. And if you look at New Zealand, if you look at Bangladesh, if you look at Sri Lanka, they all have the same issues with cricket and contracts and that sort of thing. But you don't find these players making the statements in the public and on social media regarding their board that the West Indian cricketers would make. And, you know, they all have similar issues. That's one thing. But you would find that most other players would be loyal in such that if there's an international match going on and the fixtures are known sometime in advance, that takes precedent to league cricket. But we understand everybody has to make a living and you know, try to take care of their family. But when the marquee event comes around, which is the Cricket World Cup or the IPL, those players definitely make those events. And there's an earnest, they really try hard to make the World Cup. And that's when you see a lot of them resurface. So I think this is what really rubs the public in the wrong way. Also, when you look at a player, let's say like a Pollard, let's say, and you have those issues, but you look at a young player like a Hetmyer, who may have played 60 less one-day internationals, is only about 1,000 runs behind Pollard, but yet averages about 10 runs more than Pollard. Pollard is a number six that's played over 100 one-day internationals. Mm-hmm. And you look at his T20 record, which also is in the mid-20s, but as an international, it isn't really great. And the thing is, I believe the cricket public, the West Indian cricket public, and in some cases, the administrators misread franchise results and don't appreciate that franchise results are, you know, much inferior to international results. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to assess how important these players are to us based on their international records, but also on their ability to only be available for global events and not be there when... Mm-hmm. When we're trying to get to the events. And, you know, after we've won 2 World Cups, which is true, but, you know, there are many great players and players who are better than the players we have who have retired and are unable to make their their teams, even though they have probably more to offer. You know, AB de Villiers, you can look at, well, MS Dhoni is about 38, but still a quality keeper and batsman. We're talking about players at another level compared to ours. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have to decide where we're going with our cricket. Are we nostalgic? Are we trying to look back and try to replace something that's in the past and make it the present? That may be what we're doing. But we have to honestly ask ourselves where we're going. If now we are at position number 10 in T20 and 9 in ODIs, and many of these players have played a part over the last 8 years or so while we have made this descent into the abyss of the rankings.
Right, exactly.
Mm. Oral?
I just wanted to add, Andrew, that, look, make no bones about it. It's difficult and uncharted waters, and it's a tough period to navigate because of the paradigm shift, the evolution, the emergence of T20 cricket, and the awkward dynamics that it presented to the administrators. It's not an easy space to navigate. So there are challenges, but I just think amidst all of that, we must have some values that remain as it relates to West Indies cricket as an institution and as a unique force for the Caribbean people. We have to maintain some basic principles and guidelines.
All right, well, Oral, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. Fazer, final words?
Yes, I think what Dr. Ford did, the point that he was making would be very, very relevant because it does appear in many cases that a lot of these players are really keen to play when it comes around to World Cup time because it certainly improves their market value as far as playing in those tournaments if they want to increase their value for the franchise format. But there are many different issues tied in here, and I think it all comes down to, as was alluded to by Aurel in just his last comment, about the very difficult circumstances where other jurisdictions seem to be able to work out a better working arrangement with their players, with their star players, their emerging players. And we almost always seem to be in a situation like this, going way back 70-odd years to Frankie Worrell refusing to tour India in his first year as a test cricketer because he felt he wasn't being paid enough, to 2020, where we have Andre Russell playing BPL cricket at the same time that the West Indies are playing here in the Caribbean and everything else in between. We just continue repeating the same cycle year after year in West Indies cricket.
Mm-hmm. Fazer, just before you go, in terms of what is the public in Trinidad and Tobago saying about this Dwayne Bravo situation? Are they in his corner or there's a big divide?
Well, there's no room left in the corner for everybody to fit in, Andrew, because you know how it works in the different territories. We can pretend all we want, but in a place like Trinidad and Tobago, people are all happy and joyous because Kyron Pollard is captain and because Dwayne Bravo is back in the team, and they're looking forward to Sunil Narine returning, and they're seeing Lendl Simmons and Evan Lewis opening the batting and Nicholas Puran shining brightly and so on. So from a very parochial, insular point of view, this is celebration time for the Trini element in West Indies cricket. But from the broader picture, which very few people will take the time to look at, the concern will have to be moving forward as to whether or not Dwayne Bravo strolling back into the West Indies team, does it mean automatically that he's going to be in the World Cup squad? I would hope not. I would hope it would be on the basis of his performance and whether or not he's going to be getting in the way of younger players who deserve as much of an opportunity to prove their worth for the defense of the World T20 title.
Oral, the Jamaicans are vexed.
Well, it is split. There's some support for Bravo as well. Mm. Some people are simplifying the equation, saying, is he good enough to make the team? Will he make the team better? I think that's a common sentiment as well. But there are some of us here who are a little bit uneasy about the way he just strolled back into the team.
Mm. All right. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. Oral, is always good to hear from you. And, of course, wonderful. And Fazer, enjoy the rest of your evening.
Indeed. Take care.
All right, good. So there you have it. Wonderful contributions coming from Oral Tracy in Jamaica, noted journalist, and, of course, Fazer Mohammed as well. You can certainly participate in the program, 4341790. We're going to try and see if we can touch base with Graham West in South Africa. We would want to try and see if we can reach him, given that wonderful performance by the West Indies side, of course. And we also want to certainly talk a little bit later on to Johnny Grave of Cricket West Indies. He said he's going to be out for a short while, so he doesn't have a lot of time. But I know it would interest a comment, well, in fact, a posting by the Secretary of the Barbados Cricket Association, Mr. Gregory Nichols, which certainly had the cricket tongues wagging. And I'm saying that there was a response as well from Cricket West Indies, and that is something that I would want to certainly talk about as well. Still having a bit of a challenge in getting through to Graham West, but that post that Gregory Nichols put, Barbados will not get another international match until 2023. And they say that the last regime was petty, vindictive, and dictatorial. Well, time is longer than twine. Interesting. Coming. And response. Of course, there was a response. In fact, there was a response coming from our good friend, Dr. Shallow. He said, "Comrade Gregory, these days you seem to have little appreciation for facts or just prefer misrepresenting them. You can't be serious. You can't seriously intend to maintain such reckless social media rants for 2 years." What a response.
Interesting.
All right. Okay, fair enough. What an interesting situation. 4341790, you can certainly give us a call and participate in the program. I think we can take a call, can we? Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Yes. I want to weigh in on that situation, and I really do not agree with Oral Tracy on the issue of Bravo just walking into the team. Bravo walked into the team. Let me use part of his word. Bravo walked into the team, but he made a contribution. Look at the licks that Cottrell was getting and the next opening bowler was getting, and both he and Pollard decided to pull back those runs and took some wickets.
No,
I don't think it is fair to criticize Bravo to say that he's aging. He's not aging. He come back in to make a contribution to West Indies cricket because West Indies cricket was falling below par. You could have seen it. We were struggling against Ireland.
Oh.
And you could have seen it. We were struggling. Bravo came back in and show his prowess inside there. Also Pollard exercising that slow ball all the time and taking wickets. I am supporting Bravo coming back into cricket. I'm supporting Pollard as captain because Jason was getting tired, and you could see that he was getting tired, even how to set the field, how to bowl. Pollard is my man as a Bajan. Bravo is my man as a Bajan. Look at Hetmore. We are playing Hetmore because of what? Because he's a $1 million player for India. We are playing him and he's failing all the time.
He's not failing all the time. He's had one or two good scores. I mean, he's maybe not as consistent as he should be. But I think he's a player for the future. I would like to see him have a little bit more discipline in his batting.
You like to see you. Let me cross you, Andrew. You like to see Hetmore making 25 all the time?
No, not at all. As I said, I would love him to be much more consistent. But he's got.
Yeah, everybody will.
Do
love
you
to
agree
see
that he's got lots of ability?
He got lots of ability, but we're going to play him and see him failing all the time.
And
lower his morale.
All right.
Because you're bringing him inside there, and you're sending him up in the order, up in the firing line.
Right.
And he's failing, Andrew. Failing. Bravo came in there, and he has made a contribution. You're going to see the professional. Ness of the guy coming out and playing.
All
Don't
right.
let's criticize Bravo coming. He's playing for the West Indies.
Fair enough.
I'm satisfied with that, Andrew.
All right. Thanks for your contribution.
Okay, good.
Continue to listen to Mason and Guess. All right. Let's go to St. John's, Antigua, and talk to the CEO, Mr. Johnny Grave. I don't think I've said Happy New Year to you on Mason and Guess, but let me do that now. It's not too late. Hello. How are you, Johnny?
I'm very well. Thanks, Andrew.
Good. All right. First of all, you must be quite happy with the boys in South Africa.
Yeah, I think a dream start for them, really. I think when we saw the draw in the group, drawing both England and Australia in the group, we thought it's the group of death, and the players are going to have to be at their very, very best. to get through. But we knew they had the potential and they had the ability, and they've, you know, they've demonstrated that they've been able to execute that under, you know, let's face it, you know, enormous pressure. Both games are televised, the world is watching, and I think they've represented themselves, the coaching staff and the Caribbean really, really well. And yeah, hopefully they can continue in this vein and keep the confidence going and the momentum going and go far in the competition.
Well, they're virtually into the quarterfinals now. In fact, their next opponents, they should win comfortably against Nigeria, I would imagine.
You'd like to think so on paper. Clearly, Nigeria are a side that are developing, and therefore, you know, on the back of the last two results, we need to be very professional and make sure that, you know, sometimes getting down to the semi-finals, as we know, can come down to net run rates and everything. Right. And there has been rain in South Africa, so hopefully they get the full match in, and yeah, we can boost our net run rate and take that through into the next stages.
Mm-hmm. All right. No, we just finished the tour of Ireland. Happy?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I think it was, I think it was a really good tour for both world cricket in terms of giving Ireland opportunities to play, but also you know, good matches for us to keep the momentum going in our white ball cricket. Obviously now counting down very much to the World T20 in Australia in October, and the games were competitive. I think we would have loved to have been able to promote them more and get bigger crowds and turn them into a real carnival. But I think from the on-the-field action was, you know, some of the games were absolutely brilliant. I think the probably a bit close for comfort for people like me, but the game in Kensington, won in that final over in dramatic fashion. I think, you know, we've over almost 2 million viewers in the highlights on YouTube, so the world was again watching. Mm-hmm. And I thought we acquitted ourselves well in the one dayers. And yeah, unfortunately, the weather wasn't kind to us on the first game in St Kitts, but, you know, a drawn series, I think, you know, we learn a lot. Ireland have learned a lot, and we can go to that Sri Lanka tour, which the boys have got a bit of a break now, but not too long, 2 or 3 weeks, and then into Sri Lanka, which, you know, they're just above us in the ODI ranking. So, again, difficult conditions going mm-hmm. to play in Sri Lanka, but a real test for our team, and probably an easier way for us to measure the progress under the new leadership of Phil and Kieran Pollard.
Okay, good night. We have many international grounds in the West Indies, but outside of CPL, there is a tendency for some grounds never to have the requisite number of fans in the seats. Do you think that maybe there needs to be a compromise between spreading the game throughout the region versus attendance?
No, not really, if I'm honest. I want to take all the politics out of the decision-making when it comes to allocating games. I think the highest crowds that we experienced in this series were in Grenada. Grenada didn't have cricket between 2015 and 2019. And I think it's important that we spread cricket around our international grounds. I think we need to do far more as an organisation to promote and market and make sure that all the cricket fans and even the non-cricket fans know that the West Indies team are coming to their country and to play. And we need to do more in terms of, a bit like the Women's World T20, really, put on music acts and parties and make it much more of an occasion and celebration of everything that is Caribbean. And, I think I'm certainly hope that the board continues to support the policy that every international ground will get either a test match or two, either T20s or ODIs or combination of every single year. And I hope that, you know, everyone understands that policy and we do our best to spread cricket around the region.
Okay. Graham West has been doing a good job with the under-19 teams over the last few tournaments. What is his role now outside of that in Cricket West Indies? And is there any room for him doing more?
Graham manages our whole high performance program. So clearly that's going to develop hugely as we developed the Coolidge Cricket Ground here in Antigua. But his role is around the system of high performance. So making sure that all those age groups, 15s, 17s and 19s in particular, through the emerging players and into our franchise system that we now have in professional cricket in the Caribbean, making sure that all those programs tie in and there's coordination between all the coaches and respected programs. So I think Graham will, there's plenty of scope for his role to evolve. High performance is something we're going to invest more and more in, especially as you've seen with, you know, the amount of cricket our under-19s played in the build-up to the tournament. They haven't played a huge amount in the intervening years, but in the last sort of few months leading into the competition, they played a lot of cricket. And with the emerging players that we had in the Super 50 and, again, A-team tours that now are going to take place every single year, there's a huge amount going on. And we've got a big program here scheduled for the end of the West Indies Championship, April, May and June, of high-performance camps, fast bowling and all the requisite skills for our best sort of young and emerging talent.
Okay, so what's the... I see we're going to be going to Sri Lanka next. Was that something that was in the works, or is that something that has come up more recently?
No, the schedule was agreed before the World Cup, so... We've now got a schedule all the way through to the next World Cup in 2023. So we've got these games in advance of the IPL going to Sri Lanka. And then we pause for about 4 weeks, and then our build up to the England Test Series starts. And we're going to go out to England early. We've got three warm-up games that we're looking to play in England, and a camp planned at the Rose Bowl in Southampton. And hopefully some of our test-only players will get the opportunity to play some county cricket in April as well, so that we've got really good preparation leading into, you know, what's a really important test series for us. It's important that we bounce back from the disappointment at home to India in the World Test Championship, and it's important to our fans and I think to world cricket that we retain the Wisden Trophy. So that's a major aim of the men's first team, and then we come back to the Caribbean for a white ball tour of New Zealand, and then T20s and tests against South Africa before the Caribbean Premier League. And on the eve of the World T20, I think the CPL is probably going to be the biggest and best yet. So certainly from our point of view, in terms of, you know, all the players are available, we hope we don't pick up any injuries in the CPL, and that the selectors have probably our job is to make sure the selectors have a horrible job of trying to pick the 15 that go to Australia, because all the players are in form and they're all fit and raring to go.
Mm-hmm. What about A-team cricket?
Yeah, we got 18 cricket South Africa coming in June and July, mm-hmm. Playing 3 4-day games and 5 white ball games, and they're predominantly going to be played in Antigua and Barbados. So some decent program of 18 cricket again this summer.
No, interesting. You talk about spreading the cricket. Any concerns though about, say, in Grenada? I know it, but interesting, you're going to be going to Dominica, and I also note that you may be going to Arnisville. Are there any concerns?
Not necessarily concerns. I mean, there's very clear minimum standards that we've set, and the Dominica Cricket Association and government know that we must have. You know, unfortunately, now it's not just the case of looking after the teams. You know, we've got the TV and radio crews, we've got all the sponsors and all the visiting fans. So it's the minimum hotel rooms and proximity to the stadium are very, you know, very important to us. And we can't compromise our standards or ask too much of our international teams to compromise their standards. So I hope that Dominica will be ready this summer, but if they're not, they know that the following year that there's international cricket to come. And it's a very similar position with Arnisville. I think the first games we've earmarked there in 2021, mm-hmm. on completion of hotel accommodation, and hopefully that will all go to plan, and the timings will be in line with ours, and they can host international cricket again from 2021 onwards.
Now, in relation to Barbados, that has been a hot topic. In fact, it influenced Gregory Nicholls, who's the secretary of the Barbados Cricket Association, to post Barbados will not get an international match until 2023. And they said that the last regime was petty, vindictive, and dictatorial. Time is longer than twine. Now, I note with interest as well that your vice president, Dr. Shallow, responded by saying that these days, Gregory, you seem to have little appreciation for the facts, or just prefer misrepresenting them. What's the situation in relation to Barbados?
Yeah, I think the vice president's articulated it well in terms of international cricket. In the last few months, they hosted, you know, Australia women in September. For their own reasons, they turned down the opportunity to host Super 50 in November. They've just hosted two ODIs against Ireland. We've got the, as I said earlier, the South Africa A-team matches that are taking place in June and July. I don't know what the BCA's position is yet on hosting Super 50, but as per the vice president, they've got matches allocated. Now, Australia is one of the biggest tours we have here in the Caribbean, and they've got two games against Australia, and then there's nothing bigger than an England tour, and again, that's at the moment subject to our negotiations and discussions with government, scheduled for Barbados in 2022. So, no, I don't, as you know, Andrew, don't get involved in the politics.
But No, not at all.
Continue to say is that all we can speak is the facts, and the facts are that those matches have been allocated, and you know, Barbados is a very, very important venue to us, as all the venues are in the Caribbean. And we hope we can bring international men's cricket, women's cricket, age group cricket, and A-team cricket to Barbados in the future.
Johnny, do you think that Gregory would have known of these matches before he made this post? Because it's a little strange that he would have had this kind of information and yet make such a post.
Look, I can't speak for Gregory. You'd have to ask him, but certainly in terms of us sharing that information, it's shared through our Chief Executive Committee, through Roland Topping. It's shared by the Cricket West Indies Board of Directors, of which obviously the BCA have two representatives. So, so the information is there. We've certainly been public in talking about it. I've mentioned on numerous occasions, and so has everyone involved in West Indies cricket, our new policy to allocate matches evenly throughout the 10 international venues. And that's very much the policy. There is no politics in this decision. It's purely around making sure that everyone in the West Indies gets to see the men's and women's team on a regular and rotational basis.
Is there bad blood between Cricket West Indies and the Barbados Cricket Association?
No, not to my knowledge. I think we've got a good relationship at executive level and the board level. There's no vindictiveness at any level of the board or bad relations. We're all vested in West Indies cricket and doing our utmost to move forward in a positive fashion. And you know, being brutally honest, we need all the support from the region, not just the territorial boards, but the cricket fans in Barbados, the government, the ministries of education and sport, you know, all the clubs. We need everyone to get behind us and help us compete at the world level. And Barbados continues to produce players to all of our representative teams. I think if anything, there's miscommunication and misunderstanding clearly through what Gregory said. And I've always made myself available to speak directly to the BCA board and their directors, so they fully understand our strategy and I can personally answer any questions directly to them, but obviously, in this situation, we've responded in the media, both on social media through the vice president and me through various newspaper interviews that I've done, and obviously here tonight. But I can categorically tell everyone that, you know, at the moment the schedule is that South Africa A will go in the summer, and that Australia are going next year, and England, all being well, the year after.
Okay. We were informed of a $20 million deficit for the last financial year. Do you see that impacting on the plans for tours as you've outlined for this coming year?
I hope not. We're still in the final throes of negotiating our broadcasting contracts throughout the world, and clearly the success of those or otherwise will determine you know, our business plan over the next 3 to 4 years. And look, you know, we will have no doubt to make tough choices and tough decisions. But we don't anticipate at this stage any of our plans around the tours and tournaments to be affected at all.
Well, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us. Johnny, it's always good to talk to you.
Pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Good. Fine. There you have it. We're going to pause for business calls. When we come back, we're going to try and take some calls as well and make our rounds around the Caribbean. Mason and Guest is brought to you in association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. Plenty
lottery games to win. Scratch. How you win something?
Win up to $200,000 instantly with Cash Money, the new $20 instant super scratch ticket from the Barbados Lottery. The Cash Money Super Ticket has four games on each ticket with a whopping 62 chances to win. Available at Barbados Lottery agents island wide.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch Barbados Lottery.
4341790 is the number. Give us a call and participate in the program. Mason and Guest. Interesting contribution from the CEO.
Yes,
there's no bad blood between the Cricket West Indies and the BCA.
Don't want to have a transfusion or, or you know, any other major procedures. But do we have a call?
Do you have a call there? Yes, we do. Okay, hello. Welcome, Mason and Guest.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening to you.
It is with some observation for some time that I've got. I don't know if you can explain or bring a perspective on what I'm going to say.
Right.
But we had the knighting. It is relative to knighthood. Okay. Now, we had the knighting of the three W's. We had the knighting of Hall and Griffith. We had the knighting. We just had the knighting of Mr. Greenidge.
Mm-hmm.
My reservation, and strongly so, is you had the three W's. You had the knighting of Mr. World and Mr. Walcott.
Mm-hmm.
Time passed, and then you had Mr. Weeks.
Right.
Okay. Then you went on, you had the knighting of Mr. Wesley Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And some time passed, and then you had the knighting of Griffith.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Griffith.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got the knighting of Mr. Greenidge, and there's the knighting of Mr. Now, pray tell me, you've got the three W's.
Mm-hmm.
There's some, and it looks like some detachment to me, mm-hmm. and it's of some concern. You had the three W's. How you can detach Mr. Weeks?
Right.
Then you had the Hall and Griffith. You've got a stand erected in the honor.
Mm-hmm.
Hall and Griffith stand.
Mm-hmm.
There's that long duration that detached. When how are you getting them detached? Now you have the Haynes and Greenidge stand.
Mm-hmm.
How are you getting this detachment that you see what I'm trying to establish?
Why do you think is that way, caller? Honestly, tell me honestly.
It is some oversight. It is. I don't know. What is
my why should there be oversight? Why should there be oversight?
There's a song says blame it on the rain. What to blame it on? I can't put my finger on. Mr. Mason, you know this is wrong.
Yeah, I know. Of course, I know wrong.
I'm vehement in what I've got to say. I'm very forthright.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm trying to say to you is an indictment, sort of, because why none of all the officials, what is the protocol, what is the procedure of having someone knighted? How are you going to go for ALF with B?
Mm-hmm.
Those questions have got to be answered.
Mm-hmm.
And it says it does not all go well for cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And if an analysis is carried out, you're going to say, ultimately, this is how you're going to treat me if I should reach that kind of height.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that someone like a Desmond Haynes should have been honored a long time ago with a knighthood. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying you could not knight Mr. Greenidge and left-foot Haynes.
Mm.
I'm saying you could knight the three W's and left-foot Mr. Weeks.
Right.
Laterally.
Right.
The detachment and the
lull. And it took a long time, too.
The
to
lull.
Actually, yeah.
You see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
I'm not across you.
But you're right, though, caller. And sometimes
right?
I begin.
Right, not right.
No, you're right. Sometimes I begin to trouble. It's, you know, it's about social standing, too, you know. That's how people see you, you know. I mean, that's...
You got tenacity and guts.
No, it's true. It's very true.
Yeah, social standing.
Yeah, man.
But
happens all over the world.
You know, you see this social standing thing?
Yeah. But Raul, you have that view too, but you didn't have the guts to say it.
Don't worry.
Raul, come
Mr.
on.
Mr. Mason, you're going to be him, though.
It's true.
Yeah. No, it's serious. It does not appear to be all genuinity here.
Right,
and
right.
You know I'm on record as saying, because I came the other day and said, well, you're going to tell me that you're going to now look at the 12-hour and talk about Mr. Haynes?
Mm.
When you should be in coaching capacity. You remember that like, call?
Yeah, of course.
Whatever.
Well, you know,
but
well,
you also know...
You're very much into the bosom of the current administration. No, you've got the ears of the, you're a big man in this party. So I'm sure you can use your influence to ensure that our friend Mr. Haynes is knighted soon.
You're not facetious and saying
not at all, not at all.
But Mr. I can tell you, I always try to elude you. You've got some strategy that you must put me in a vortex that I can't get out.
Oh, love that word, vortex.
I regard you, sir.
All the best. Let's take another. All right, right. Roll a famous call. Let's take another call. 4341790. Hello, welcome, listening guests.
Good evening.
Hello to you. Quite appropriately, you're following Roll.
Good evening, Mr. Mason.
Good evening to you.
I'm my favorite, Dr. Ford.
Right, so I'm not your favorite?
Not like Mr. Ford.
Okay.
There's something called the truth.
The truth. Okay, fine. Yeah. All right, but by the way, before you contribute, I had a wonderful evening on Sunday. The BC hosted the cricketers and my very good friend Jason Holder was there. We had a long chat, and it was absolutely marvelous talking to Jason Holder.
But you know, I'm going there with you.
No, I just wanted to let you know, by the way.
Yeah, because you're going from Jason out to Brathwaite.
To Brathwaite?
Yeah, but you know, Brathwaite in my cap, in a.
Who's this? Oh, Craig. Another note. It's the first time I've spoken to Craig Brathwaite in about 5 years. He came up to me, he said, Andrew, we need to speak. And I want to say to you that I give him high marks. We sat, we chatted. I said, Mr. Brathwaite, there's nothing personal at all. In fact, I would say to you that I thought that Craig Brathwaite's captaincy in the last match against Guyana had improved. I saw a captain that had a little bit more aggression to him. And you must give marks where marks are due.
But can you, with that give you an idea then that you ain't to be so hard on persons? Give them a little time? You learned that also?
Well, I mean, it's a long time, though. I mean, he's been captain for six, seven years.
He's not my captain. He surprised me in the last game.
In what way did he surprise you?
When he learned or was told in the management.
Right.
The young man, he's a good footballer, it's just that he needs a little confidence.
Oh, you're talking about young Harden, Keon Harden.
He came back out the morning and
right.
gave him
started
the
attack with him, yeah.
Yeah, and it paid off.
Mm.
But Mr. Mason.
Yes.
You were so aggressive on the last president.
Really?
To me. I'm going to see to the difference.
In what way was I aggressive, sir?
I can ask you a couple of questions.
Mm.
Who is the person that say? After Brathwaite and Holder was moved from the 20 and 50, who's the person that said they will have to perform to regain a player?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember who said it?
Mr. Cameron?
He said it. No. Why are you going to Cameron in it? That, his name is so much in your mouth that you're going to call him my name.
Are you talking about Mr. Skerritt?
He said that?
Yes, he did.
You can't remember?
No, I remember very well.
And he said the players will have to perform like Bravo.
Right.
That wasn't playing at all.
Right.
But he picked those two persons.
So, Callie, you do not support the return of Bravo?
I could support that.
Okay.
A man that walk off of a country that giving cricketers that can't even hit the ball, can't even bat.
Mm.
And that country made them rich.
Mm.
And you go walk off in a game in that country?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're playing at Hamilton in Governor's Road? You know that ground? They call it the Victor Glasgow ground now.
Yeah, I know the ground.
He walk off of an international game.
Mm.
And you're all excusing him.
Mm.
And not only that, but you're blaming, and I say you're because you're one.
Right.
Blaming the former president that as he was so close, he could have gone and talked to the players.
Mm-hmm.
A president don't get mixed up in then negotiating between management and the union. Mm-hmm. That is what was going on. Why should the former president, mm-hmm. get involved in a dispute directly?
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You have Bravo that walk off, forget that he was a diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
He told us IPL, Trinidad, anybody else could play.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that too?
Yes, I remember that very well.
And let me tell you the fair. I am so disappointed with the West Indies and the cricket since the president changed that. It is shocking.
Oh dear.
We have men like Russell and Gale, them fellas. All they're playing cricket. who has to get hurt. And I don't know if the rest is paying for the injuries and things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you're going to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly the rest is playing here, Canada playing for eight.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear the commentators besides that gentleman from Jamaica, because you love him.
Who's that?
The gentleman you had on early, the reporter from Jamaica.
Oh, Oral Tracy.
He's the only true commentator on radio. Mohammed that came out because he can't stand against Trinidad.
That's not true. Fazir is not that kind of brown person.
He might have
person.
To move to Barbados.
No, not at all, man. I've heard Fazir.
He's a truthful commentator till it gets to Trinidadians.
You fine?
Let me say the same thing.
No, man, that's not true. Fazir's criticized Trinidad and Tobago. And
it's my opinion. How a man that the speak like him that is so on top of cricket.
Right.
Could get on this station
right.
to give me a impression that Bravo should be back. Why?
But that's his view. But that doesn't mean that he's under pressure to support Bravo because Fazir is a Trinidadian.
I don't think so.
I know Fazir very well. I've had tremendous respect for Fazir over the years. Sometimes.
No, man.
I don't believe that at all. Yes,
we
my friend.
We have a Bajan.
Yes.
That was one of my favorite cricketers.
Who's that?
That was in Trinidad, in England, studying now.
Oh, Phil O'Wallace?
And you know that I listened to him on your program.
Yes.
I went for Junior Bravo. When the man had not won 3, 6, and 50. And the 50, he made it in 6 hours.
Right, right.
But he was in Trinidad too.
Mm.
Trinidad is the strangest cricket nation, cricket country in the Caribbean.
Mm.
Then, don't know how good you bat. You can make 150. You don't hear a clap.
Okay.
You don't hear a cheer.
Mm.
I don't know why, but I know when they come here and Simmons beating Tino Beth, you see a Bajan's cheering.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mason, we got to deal with the truth.
Right.
Something is wrong in Caribbean cricket right now where Trinidad is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to get a place to check it. And all of you that went after the former president, I will go after this one.
All right. Well, I want to thank you. I know this is a very special day for you, Errol Barrow Day, and I know that.
You want to steal what Errol Barrow do and give the impressions you all are doing.
Oh my God, you're something else. Have a good night, sir.
Okay.
All right. Can we take another one? Yes. 434-1790. Yes, we can. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Hi, good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, Randolph. How are you?
Hi, and good evening, Dr. Ford.
Yes.
Now, first up, former Combermarian, Empire Middle Order Batsman and West Indies Middle Order Batsman. I've not heard Roland on your show for a little while. Is he down under the weather?
No, haven't heard him, but I'm sure he'll be back.
No, he'll be back. He'll be back.
So, yeah, because I've not been hearing him. So I was just wondering if he was down on the level.
Mm-hmm.
First, Andrew, let me get straight to the meat of the matter. The commentary and analytical gentleman that you had for the last game here in Barbados against Guyana was did a fantastic job.
Oh.
And I must say that I'm sure that Antonio did made a debut presentation there on your show.
Antony Allen. Like, yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
And
of course,
your
Empire Man.
Yeah.
Former Empire Man.
I must say that the two of them combined together is great. Now, it's causing me that if the two of them are not going to be doing commentary, unless it's anybody like Roland Butcher, I listen. Otherwise, I know that they don't talk all the time. They speak after the ball.
Right.
Off a question is asked. And they give a in-depth situation of what is going on. But I thought the commentary was good.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with me, although I called for it, the bouncy wicket that we had at Kensington Oval, which encouraged the fast bowlers really to, didn't have to put the back into anything.
Mm-hmm. Very good pitch. It was a very good pitch, actually. Good cricket pitch.
That a lot of the other Caribbean players, their meal and diet is on spin. But technically, with good bouncy wickets and good fast bowling playing wickets,
Young holders, he's got a lot of ability in Harden as well.
But he did something there the other day when he struck on the head.
Right.
The committee, I can't remember who it was, you or Keith, who said that he never joined the rest to find out what was happening.
No, in fact, he went back to his bowling mark.
So that tells you the determination. Now, that in itself was a psychological thing to say.
He bowled very well, and he's certainly one for the future.
I thought it was great. It was a great game, and I hope that the guys will continue to perform. I thought Braffitt, he really carried three slips of most of the entry and two really fast balls.
Had a forward short leg and silly point sometimes as well.
Well, at least I think that Singh got a lot of free runs sometimes down to third man.
Third man, yes. In fact, he had 14 fours, and I believe 8 might have gone through there.
But outside of that, I thought he had the team.
He was much better.
On the other hand, the Ireland situation, I think that was just, to me, I call that exercise a dress rehearsal for the West Indies. I don't think it was nothing to jump up a boat because I think Ireland took the West Indian bowling by the scruff of the neck in the first game.
Yes.
I mean by the scruff of their neck. But there's only, when you go to St. Kitts, which you would know the ground is a small ground.
Very small ground.
But at the beginning, it's conducive. The ball goes into the prison, I think, quite often. I must say that it was a fantastic thing, and I'm glad that the series ends how it ends. Where the Bravo situation is concerned, I think that Bravo should never, ever award the West Indies colors again. Couldn't wear those colors if he had what he did in India, leading the West Indies team, playing for Australia or England. He could not put back on those colors. But Bravo just wanted to go to the World Cup. He didn't got in the West Indies cricket at heart.
He just wants to go to the World Cup.
And those fellas are not really interested. And it is unfair to the up-and-coming middle-order players or those aspiring medium pace bowlers. We're talking about Bravo. The first over Bravo when it come back, I think nearly 17 or 18 runs get knocked off him in the first over that he bowling up in that 20. Although you get 2 or 3 wickets. Now my thing is that all of these fellas crawling back to carry them. But you know we carry the best team to England. And you know what happened in the ODI series.
Right. So Art Randolph.
Have a good evening.
Have a good evening to you. So we're going to pause for business calls, and then we come back. We're going to be speaking to Ian Bradshaw and, of course, Tony Great Mason, I guess. It's brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. Plenty lottery games to win. Scratch and you could win something.
Here's your chance to cash in on big winnings for 2020 with the newest $10 scratch ticket from the Barbados Lottery. Purchase a cash-in ticket today for your chance to win up to $100,000 and to double or even triple your winnings on each ticket. So play and win big with cash-in from the Barbados Lottery.
Barbados Lottery.
Let's go to Trinidad and Tobago and talk to a man who's preparing for Carnival. Of course, we're talking about Tony Gray. Hello, Tony.
Yes, good evening to you, Andrew. Good evening to your panel there, and good evening to your listeners.
Have you bought your costumes as yet, Tony?
No, I always had it with me.
All right. Well, I know your very good friend Ian Bradshaw is not a carnival man. I don't think he's ever gone down, Spring Garden at Crop Over Time. Hello to you, Ian. How are you?
Hello, Andrew, and hello to all of your guests.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Now, before we do anything, I had a heart attack almost, Tony, when I picked up and I saw that after 2 matches, Trinidad and Tobago, the Red Force, are in the lead. Is it because that you've retained your job barely as the chairman of selectors?
Not really. I think it was a concerted collective effort by everybody. The staff members, Mervyn Dillon, the head coach, the assistant coach in Keno Mason. I think the manager has done an excellent job, and the Darren Bravo, the captain, the new captain, has done an excellent job. And it's just young players, a new dispensation, and these players are very hungry and working very hard for success.
Wonderful. Ian, let's turn our attention now to the recently concluded series. Ireland, were you happy?
Well, I was pleased with the result. We finished the ODIs with a 3-0 margin, and we were able to tie the T20s. As I said before, I consider this one of those feel-good tours for the West Indies where we play opposition that may not, may be a bit inexperienced, and it gives our guys an opportunity to get a positive result. And once you're looking to develop a team, it's going to be important that you get those successes and they taste success so that it encourages them to just strive harder and do better so that when we get tougher opposition, we can be successful. But give credit to Ireland. I thought that coming out of their winter, where they were not being playing a lot of cricket, they did show a lot of character in most of the games. And in some of the shorter forms of games, as you know, with the more inexperienced teams, they tend to be more competitive the shorter the game. As you get into the longer forms of the game, they tend to struggle more. So I wasn't surprised that they were able to win at least one of the T20s. Overall, I'm satisfied that the West Indies did what they had to do for the most part. We were able to give some exposure to some young players. I'm glad that Shepherd was able to get an opportunity. Most likely, if we were at full strength, someone like him may not get the opportunity. So to put on West Indies colours and to play some cricket was good for him.
Mm-hmm. Tony, what was your take on it?
Well, I shared similar views with Ian there because at the start of the series, you expected West Indies team, a better ranked team, to do well. The objective, it has to be to dominate against a lower team in Ireland. And we dominated most of the series. In the One Days, for example, we won the first game by, 5 wickets. The second game, we relaxed a little bit and, got a fright there by winning by just 1 wicket. And the third game, we went back to our dominant ways. So I expected that type of outcome. So it was a good series, won this series for the West Indies team where that is concerned. Now, in the T20, I was a bit disappointed for us losing that game because, our batsmen performed well, got great starts. About six of them got great starts and didn't finish the job. So I was a bit disappointed because they had healthy strike rates, and they were going guns. They were going well. And a lot of these batsmen, obviously, played in the IPL. To lose that first game, that first T20 game against Ireland, I was a bit disappointed with that. But that's the nature of the game, the T20 game. Anybody can come on a particular day, and two batsmen can perform well, two bowlers can perform when a one bowler can perform and do some magic, and that's it. So the shorter the format, the greater the probability of a lesser team, a lesser ranked team, winning against a better ranked team.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ian, the big talk, of course, is the return of Dwayne Bravo to the West Indies side in the three matches. In terms of batting, he made just 9 runs. But, of course, in bowling, he looked a lot better. In fact, in the three matches, 10 overs and one ball, 65 runs, 5 wickets, best of 3 for 19. My first question to you, Ian, do you support the return of Dwayne Bravo to the West Indies team?
Well, I said before on the show, Andrew, that I expected that Dwayne would be given an opportunity in this series because in a World Cup year, it's important that you have the assessment of the players that could feature as early as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And having given the olive branch, so to speak, to many of the players who were not involved in some of the previous years and having made that decision to embrace the return of some of the guys who made themselves available, I wasn't surprised that Dwayne played. Mm-hmm. He is a very experienced player, and truth in the fact, it will be useful to have experience. Now,
Ian, would you have picked him?
Yes, I would have given him.
I just wanted to be absolutely sure, is he?
Yes, I would have given him the player because what you have to do, Andrew,
yes,
is that you have to understand that Dwayne Bravo doesn't automatically make your team.
Okay.
Dwayne Bravo comes back like any other player and shows his worth. And I think that is what we're trying to assess right now. Mm-hmm. Is he fit enough? Does he still have the skills under pressure of international cricket to perform? And I think that this series we've played, we have one coming up against Sri Lanka, we'll start to understand how a Dwayne Bravo can feature in our cricket. Because while we have a lot of talent, in under World Cup pressure, it's going to be important that we have some experience in our team. And I would expect that someone like Andre Russell, once he's fit, mm-hmm. will definitely come back in.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to ensure that we have the opportunity to pick our best 11 going into World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Tony?
Yeah, I mean, Dwayne Bravo, because of his vast history and because he has played in different franchises throughout the world, and the biggest one of them is the IPL, has shown the ability to deal with the pressure out there, especially with the ball. And if you look at our bowling, you know, it's not as strong as it can be, especially when batsmen are going after our bowlers. And we have seen that in the most emphatic way with Ireland in that first T20 game. So we needed somebody like Dwayne with his vast experience. Now, the fitness is always going to be questioned. He's, 36 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And once he's fit, he should be on the West Indies team. And people are talking about the past. Now, this
is that the only criteria, Tony? Fitness?
Well, fitness and performance. Mm. And obviously, I know him personally. Yeah? Mm. So I will be talking from a more informed point of view because of the fact that I know him personally.
Right.
I know that he has that unremitting quality of never say die attitude. It's something that we need on the field of play.
Mm.
The last program I spoke about mentorship. Under pressure, on the world stage, you mm-hmm. need somebody like that to not just perform well and show the younger bowlers what to do and the younger batsmen what to do, but to mentor them on the field of play. So you have not just the elected or selected captain, but other captains where leadership is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Interesting indeed.
It's a different dynamic, you know, when you have a senior player to mm-hmm. that with that ability, with that experience. It's a different dynamic on the field of play.
Gentlemen, just before you go, of course, Ian, you must be very happy with the performance of the under-19 boys in South Africa.
Yes, and we go back to a couple of years ago when they too started the year in a victorious manner, and we're only hoping that they can go from strength to strength. That triggered the ladies then, or inspired them
mm-hmm.
to go on and do well, and then the men followed suit, and mm-hmm. it was a wonderful year for West Indies cricket.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that we have some tremendous talent within the region, and our guys at that level can compete with most teams in the world. But what I want to stress is that I don't think that we support the team well enough prior to going.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it is publicized well enough. We don't know who the players are.
Mm-hmm.
When they go and they win two games, then we mm-hmm. get excited.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're going to be true to ourselves and true to the development of West Indies cricket, we have to do a far better job of promoting the games and let cricket really take some level of prominence in society.
Mm. Tony?
Yeah, I like the performance of the team. I like the performance of the team because it reminds me of the 2016 triumph that we had in the under-19 tournament. And, you know, it's something that has to be said time and time again, reiterated so that we have that passion for West Indies cricket and know that we can do it and repeat those successes. I mean, we are the only country in the history of the World Cup to win 3 World Cups in 1 year.
Wonderful.
In the 19 tournament. We beat Australia in a women's final by, 8 wickets.
Mm-hmm.
And then we beat England. And these teams come from better cricketing systems, more potent cricketing systems. But it's a wonderful start to the tournament. And, you know, people look at the players on the field of play. They look very fit, vibrant. They look like they have real extreme confidence. And they have a great staff because I've worked with a lot of them. I've worked with Graham West, the under-19s, 2017 in the 50-over tournament in the region. Benjamin is an excellent exponent of... Yeah, Kenneth Benjamin is an excellent exponent when it comes to coaching fast bowlers and bowlers in general. And you have Martin Gallier, the strength and conditioning specialist. on tour with them. So they have an excellent staff. They have big, strong players, physically strong, because physical fitness will play its part in being successful in that tournament because of the nature of the tournament. And they have skilled players. I mean, Naeem Young is just fantastic.
Yes, yes. Big, strong guy.
Yeah.
Very, very strong. All right, gentlemen, we want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. It's always a pleasure to hear from you, Ian, and of course, Tony. If you win the championship this year, then I would imagine that you may hold on to the job for another 5 years.
I would like to win because I think that we have a great combination of young players and senior players around to be successful this year.
Wonderful. Thanks, gentlemen. Enjoy the rest of your evening. All right. I think we can go and take a call. We can. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guess.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. A happy New Year to Dr. Ford.
Happy New Year, sir.
Yes, please. No. This Bravo included in the West Indies C20. If Bravo had taken 22 of the cakes, I would have still leave him home. I had no right in the West Indies team. Yes,
Hello, Adam? Hello. You're listening to your radio. Hello.
Hello.
You're listening to your radio. Talk to me. You're an experienced caller. You call all the time.
Yeah. The radio gave me some trouble.
Oh, okay, I understand. I understand. Yes. But how are you? How are you though?
I good, brother.
I know. I know you said good evening to Dr. Ford and not to me.
Well. That's my main man.
But what about me? Am I not your main man too?
Nah.
Where is that?
You know what I do.
I know that.
Yeah, me. You don't want to get
So Dr. Ford is the main man?
Yes, of course.
All right. So what do I have to do to become your friend?
Well, I really have all the boyfriend.
I like that one. That's a classic.
I tell you about Bravo. Bravo should never be in the West Indies.
Right.
He walk out.
You walk out.
And walk back in.
Oh my dear.
Has to get all the wickets. Right, by a player, he have no right with a player.
Well, I want to thank you for calling. I know that you listen to this program. You don't call us.
Mr. Bayside.
You don't listen?
Nah.
So you don't want to talk to Dr. Ford?
This is the first time in about 6 months that I listen to this program.
Oh, dear.
When last you hear me? You don't hear me for this program?
All right. Okay. Well, thanks very much for coming through and talking to us. Enjoy the rest of your evening. All right. Let's go now and talk to Vernon Springer. I know that you still have him? Yeah. I know with interest that the Leewards are not doing well at all. Vernon is the CEO of the Leewards board. Vernon, good evening to you, sir. What's going on with your side?
Let me say good evening to my friends in Barbados, Adrian Donovan, Milton Small and company, all of my friends, and let me say good evening to your listeners, Andrew. I was listening, and I heard some interesting comments, but I'll start with the Leewards first.
Sure.
Leeward Islands Hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly have not got off to the exciting start that we really would have liked. As you know, we are going to be having the services of Rakim Cornwall back for the third game. After he would have had a small surgery where he would have had to miss the first two games.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly have not turned up yet. I still feel we are still not shell shocked from the final defeat to the emerging stars, but we rebound.
Mm-hmm. So Rakim, he's an important cog in your wheel, and you really want to have him back.
Yes, just like everybody else, who's important. And I just think that we are not really batting as well as we really would like. But to be honest with you, Andrew, if you look at the Leeward Islands from since this professional system has started, we've played some 55 matches, won 16, lost 30, and drawn 9. And so when you look at that period, for over a period of time, and during that period of time, we would have had close to about 3 to 4 coaches in that interim set up. This is Stuart Williams' first full season. He has a two-year contract. And in the Super 50, to win 7 out of 10 games within a short period, because he would have only picked up the job, I would say, maybe the end of, say, maybe around about October. Mm-hmm. So he really has not really cemented and got himself going into a real field to be able to get his team going. So it is important that they start winning from the third game, because they're going to have a break. And then, you know, some of the players who are in there, the Devon Thomases and company, somebody got to start putting up their hand and making some runs, coming through and scoring some runs.
Mm. How's your captain doing?
Well, I think this is Jamal Hamilton's real first season. And like I said, he's, along with Rakim Conwell, is our latest test player. There are some pundits who feel that if you have the services of Kyron Powell back or Rakim Conwell or whatever, that, you know, maybe one of them should have been given back the responsibilities of captain. The Leeward Islands Cricket Board directors made a decision that they were going to invest in Jamal Hamilton under a new coach, Stuart Williams, new coaching staff. And you have, with time, you have to give him time. I was listening to you talk about Craig Brathwaite and his improvement as captain.
Right.
I think that is something, Andrew, which we realistically have to look at in the region in terms of our leadership, our captains. But I also feel, Andrew, that the management teams are the ones who are supposed to also help with captaincy. Mm-hmm. Because captaincy, you got to have a skill about it. You can't just take up your test player and say, okay, I'm going to make him a captain. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that your test player is the best person to be your captain. So that's something of which I feel that we also have to look at. John Campbell, for one, this is the first time that he's going to be captain in the Jamaica team. Kevin Hodge from the Windward Islands. Mm-hmm. So we've got a couple of young new captains who are going to be tested over this four-day period. You have to have the good support staff around you and also the senior players to be able to help you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going off to St. Lucia. Is the team in St. Lucia ready?
The team is in St. Lucia already, and they've made one change. Rakim Conwell is back in. Azari Joseph is also going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking to have Hayden Walsh, but Cricket West Indies shut that down very quickly. So we didn't have the luxury of having Hayden Walsh for this game. As you know, Hayden Walsh is a very important player now.
When you say shut it down, what do you mean?
Well, the West period, West.
Okay.
So you know, you have to understand that we have to share. This is about West Indies cricket right now.
Right.
And so that is important. We're glad that Hayden is getting that opportunity to be able to revive himself from that tour. And most likely he will get himself organized again to go to Sri Lanka. So,
but of course, you're happy to have him because he was in Barbados and didn't get a play, as they would say.
Well, Andrew, I wouldn't say he didn't get a play. I would say that it was a learning process.
Mm.
And I think that is something which, Andrew, we have not come to grips with in the Caribbean.
Mm.
Now, the professional setup gives players an opportunity to move around in different cultures.
Right.
And if you look at what happened with Hayden Walsh going to Barbados, it would have really benefited his cricket in a real big way.
Okay.
Not only for in the 4 day, but even playing with the Barbados team itself. Because sometimes, just by having different coaches around in a different culture, you come up with a different mindset. Let's look at Asad Fodderdin. Maybe Asad Fodderdin, in fairness, Andrew, might not be in a real... He's maybe a mentor in Jamaica in terms of helping the young batsman.
Right.
And you could see his work ethic has also changed. He's got a lot fitter. You know, you could hear him talking about cricket. Maybe he wasn't like that in Guyana. Maybe if the professional system had not come on stream, Asad Fodderdin maybe might not have been playing regional cricket.
I see.
So it's a gathered give and take situation. I would tell you that Hayden would have benefited with his short time being in Barbados because they play a lot of cricket in Barbados. And you're going to learn cricket in Barbados. And I think that was helpful to him.
Now, talk to me. What's the feeling like in your country, St. Kitts, about the return of Dwayne Bravo? Do they like the return of Dwayne Bravo? Tell me, Vernon.
The two games that were played, Andrew, the second game, you know, would have got rained off. Bravo is a household name. Any even if there's only 20 spectators, the spectators in St. Kitts and Nevis are going to come out and support West Indies cricket. It doesn't matter. But I will say, Andrew, and I want to take some time out on this program to salute the groundsmen at the Warner Park Cricket Stadium for being able to get the third game in, Andrew, because it was raining real bad in St. Kitts and Nevis, to the point that there were certain areas in St. Kitts, in Sandy Point and St. Paul's and even Nevis, there were no boats running, so nobody from Nevis came down.
Oh, dear.
But when I told my counterpart in Antigua so that the game was completed and West Indies won, they asked me which game, mm-hmm. if I was dreaming, because there was so much rain, and those grounds when I was here from 6 in the morning at the office, and they kept walking. Every time they took off the covers, and the rain came.
Mm.
Took off the covers, rain came.
Oh.
It seems we lost. We lost
Yes, about the time when he was talking about the boats not coming from Nevis.
Yeah, I was kind of curious to find out the injury that
I don't know if he was just trying to see if he can get him back there before. But so far, interesting.
Cornwall should boost that team quite a lot in both sides of the ball.
What about Barbados' victory against Guyana?
Well, I was pleased because I didn't remember when last we'd won a game, but I'm
since
also
2014.
Happy to see that the young fast bowlers have made a contribution and had an impact.
Right.
Because I'm not hearing you.
Okay. Oh, we are hearing you loud and clear. Dr. Ford wants to know about the nature of the injury to our good friend, Mr. Cornwall.
He's under. He's cleared now to play, so he's all right. He's all right. Mm. He's cleared by the Cricket West Indies Authority.
You mentioned surgery, so I was just curious as to.
Right. Yeah. Just a slight thing. Just nothing.
Okay.
So you should be okay. So, but I didn't get your piece though. Are you personally? Do you support the return of Dwayne Bravo, Vernon?
Well, Andrew, I was listening to some of your callers who were calling in and said that they didn't see that Bravo needed to play for the West Indies again.
Right.
But it's amazing, Andrew and Dr. Ford. The Australian had an incident where Steve Smith, David Warner and company were involved in what we would call the biggest scandal that we could maybe think about in world cricket.
Right.
They were banned and everybody was lobbying for them to come back. And it is quite okay. We had a situation in England where Ben Stokes got into a fight, and his teammate. Mm. And that was relaxed, and everything all right, and everybody came back. So I was listening to somebody saying tonight that if Bravo was from Australia or England, that he would not allow to be played for the West Indies.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of how we look at it, we are all human beings. And all of us make some sort of mistake at some point in time in life. It doesn't mean that this is the end of the world, Andrew. And I find sometimes in the Caribbean, we don't have any empathy for our superstars.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be reasons sometimes, Andrew, why people are driven by a number of motives.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people, Andrew Mason, talk about you and say that they feel that you're too critical of the players. But it's not. That's your job.
Mm-hmm.
Your job, Andrew, and our job as broadcasters is to call it how we see it.
Mm-hmm.
We are not agents of boards or players. We understand the cricket. We are armchair critics. But at the same time, we are given an analysis of a situation. It doesn't mean that you don't like Andrew Mason's opinion, because if you sit down and you listen to Andrew Mason's comments, you might realize that it's the better for you, rather than just thinking up in a situation and say, well, I don't like what Andrew Mason says. Listen maybe to the relevance as to maybe why Andrew Mason said it at the time, and maybe get some sense out of it. So in terms of Bravo, I'm very passionate about Bravo because I first met Bravo in Trinidad and Tobago, and the first time that we had the Cricket West Indies Under 15 Championship, where Carly Powell was the manager of the Leeward Island team. And that's where we first met Bravo and his brother in Santa Cruz in Trinidad and Tobago. And I think that the contribution of Bravo to West Indies cricket is important at this time. But I listen to everybody talking about Bravo and Russell. I want to bowl an off break here tonight, Andrew.
Sure.
Why are we not having a discussion about Marlon Samuels?
Okay.
Forgotten man.
And I realize that we're talking about everybody else. But I'm saying, Andrew, that in 2019, the man who took us across the line to help us to qualify for the World Cup in England was all of a sudden told that he was disruptive to the West Indies team. He was the only person, when everybody else turned their back, who put up his hand and said, I am going with these young troops, and I'm going to make sure that West Indies qualify for the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And when the time came for him to be on the world stage, we said, we don't want you.
So are you saying, Vernon, that Marlon Samuels is being unfaired?
Well, it's automatic, Andrew. Mm. We're talking about everybody else.
Oh, dear.
And I'm saying, Andrew, the 2020 World Cup is coming up again.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we don't make the same mistake with Chris Gayle. And I'm saying that just like Ian Bradshaw.
Right.
If you're going to the World Cup, Andrew, you have to take your best troops.
Right.
Your best troops who are available to you right now is Chris Gayle, Andrew Russell. Once Sonil Narayan is available and fit, once Marlon Samuels is committed and fit and want to play, you should take those guys.
What about Darren Sammy? What about Darren Sammy?
He can't get into this team.
Mm. Based on what?
I like him as a person. I like him as a former captain.
Okay.
But I'm saying to you, he will have to go and really extraordinary perform in the 2020 CPL. But that's present form right now, Andrew.
Can't make it.
I can't see him getting into the team.
Oh, I see. And suppose Badri came with a retirement.
He wouldn't make it right now either. He would struggle to get in.
Mm.
If Narayan is available, Badri will struggle to get in.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the spin bowlers around the T20 now?
I feel Dr. Ford and Andrew Mason.
Go with Narayan. Mm.
Chris Gayle is easily still one of our best bowlers in T20.
Right.
If I had anything to do with any selection there, he would certainly come and bowl some nice tight four overs for me.
Can his back handle bowling four overs? That's the question.
If he is what?
Can his back deal with bowling four overs, you know, several times during a week in game conditions? I'm not sure.
Those guys
got
something to prove, Doc.
Once they put
on those colors, they got a couple of things to prove, right?
Yeah.
This might be the last way that we have all these stars together.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should really give Chris Gayle and company a good send-off.
You reckon? Well, it should be interesting. Just before you go, Vernon, we got just a couple minutes left in the show. Your assessment of Ricky Skerritt so far as president? I know he's from your country, St. Kitts.
Well, Andrew, I don't want to assess the Cricket West Indies leadership.
Okay.
What I can say to you is that I like what I've seen from Phil Simmons, who's been recalled as the West Indies coach
right.
to the West Indies team.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different temperament in the team.
Right.
The selection panel headed by Roger Harper is a no-nonsense man.
Right.
And I think that is what we should be able to look at. What I want to see, Andrew, for the four-day competition is to hear more pitches like what happened at Kensington Oval.
Very good pitch. Very good pitch.
I personally feel that Cricket West Indies needs to take Ken Crafton is trying his best. But I'm saying, Andrew, the regional cricket, we need to pay a little bit more attention to the franchise cricket pitches. Because if we're going to compete on the world stage, it means that we must have better pitches in Jamaica, Guyana, you name it, straight across, that can be able to help not only our bowlers, but our batsmen. Because when we go to New Zealand and our players in the Caribbean can't hook and they can't cut, they're going to be found wanting when they go to New Zealand, when they go to England, because this is what is going to be happening. So let's start to practice before the regional competition should be the breeding ground. Because remember, Andrew, if we don't pay attention to what's happening at the franchise level, after you leave the franchise level, you go to the test level.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't fix that and put systems in place, I think all of what we're going to be talking about, the next 5 years, we're going to be saying the same tune.
All right.
So we have to pay attention to our pitches, and pay attention to our pitches that when teams come to the Caribbean, just like the days of old, we need to know that, listen, once you're playing at Kensington Oval, you're playing at Sabina, or you're playing at wherever, that West Indies is going to win that test match because we have our firepower.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much indeed, Vernon, for coming through and talking to us. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. We weren't able to reach Graham West all the way in South Africa. We hope by the time that we speak to him next week that we can be celebrating, as they say, from near and from far, and we were not able to get. So, Clive, maybe it's way past his bedtime now. We were hoping to reach him. But, of course, it was great to hear from Fazer and Old Tracy. A wonderful discussion. Ian Bradshaw joined us, Vernon Springer, Tony Gray, Johnny Gray. And, of course, we were very happy to have Dr. Ford in the studio. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a brighter tomorrow. It's good night.